Alright, today we are in Genesis 45 and 46, the big reveal. So at the end of Genesis chapter 44, we see that the brothers are pleading with Joseph, specifically Judah. Verse 32 of chapter 44, Judah saying to Joseph, doesn't know that it's Joseph, obviously, but saying, "Your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad a slave to my lord. Let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, lest I see the evil that would overtake my father?'" And at that time, we talked about Judah serving as a substitute for their brother, so that Benjamin could go back. And we see that Judah very much intently focused on his father, Jacob, and not wanting anything to happen to his father, even acting for the glory of his father, as it were, as someone mentioned in the discussion after the recording had stopped last time. And so we get to Genesis chapter 45, verse 1, and the big reveal here. So it reads, "Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried, 'Have everyone go out from me.' So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?' But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Please come closer to me.' And they came closer. And he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt.'" Verse 5, "And now, do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. And you shall live in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children, and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. There I will also provide for you, for there are still 5 years of famine to come, lest you and your household and all that you have be impoverished. And behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth which is speaking to you. Now you must tell my father of all my splendor in Egypt, and all that you have seen. You must hurry and bring my father down here.' Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept on them. And afterward, his brothers talked with him." So here we have it, the big reveal. Joseph can't hold it in any longer. Verse 1, he could not control himself before everyone who stood by him. And he excuses all of the Egyptians so that he's alone with his brothers. And he says, here, verse 3, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But we see before that in verse 2, him weeping. And we've seen this before, specifically chapter 42, verse 24, chapter 43, verse 30. Joseph is a very, I don't want to say emotional, but he has strong emotions and affections. And so he weeps here. And of course, we see that in verses 14 and 15 as well, just weeping so loudly that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard as well. And in verse 3, he reveals himself, "I am Joseph." His brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. That word dismayed, it can mean terrified, it can mean perplexed. They're basically standing there beside themselves, as it were. They can't believe it. It's been 20 long years, and they realized that their brother Joseph, whom they had sold into slavery, is alive. And in verse 4, he calls them closer to him. They come closer, and he tells them again, "I'm your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt." And then there's this incredible testimony to the sovereignty of God. Verse 5, Joseph says, God sent me before you to preserve life. Verse 7, God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Verse 8, it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. So we see, and we'll see again in chapter 50, verse 20, this very high view of God's sovereignty, not just in Joseph's life, but in the lives of Jacob and his sons. And this threefold titles here in verse 8, Joseph is a father to Pharaoh, lord of all of Pharaoh's household, and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Again, very high titles for Joseph. He has risen so very high, not just in Egypt, but in the world at this point. Egypt is surely a superpower. And then in verse 9, he tells them, hurry and go up to my father. Say to him, thus says your son Joseph. Right? This just must have been an incredible thing for Joseph's brothers to be able to do, an incredible thing for Jacob to hear. And it looks as though in verse 10, he's already provided a place for them. It's perhaps that Joseph has already worked it out, these plans with Pharaoh. So verse 10, you shall live in the land of Goshen. So most maps identify Goshen as in the northern part of Egypt, very near the Nile River Delta. And of course, the Jacob and his sons, they are primarily shepherds. They have large flocks. They will need lots of grass and pasture land, and Goshen near the Nile River Delta will be a good place for them to live so that their flocks and their family can thrive. Joseph says, verse 11, I will also provide for you. And as we see Joseph as a type of Jesus Christ, we see that the Son is providing for all of his brothers. And this is an incredible typography as well. He knows from the vision that was given to Pharaoh, verse 11, there are still 5 years of famine to come. And so the son, Joseph, is going to be a provider for his family. It says, verse 13, tell my father of all my splendor in Egypt and bring my father down here. And again, we see in verses 14 and 15 the weeping and the emotion that Joseph could no longer hold bottled up. We pick up in verse 16. Now when the news was heard in Pharaoh's house that Joseph's brothers had come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households and come to me. And I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. Now you are ordered, do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. And do not concern yourselves with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh, and gave them provisions for the journey. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And to his father he sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his father on the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the journey. Then they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. But he was stunned, for he did not believe them. When they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. Then Israel said, it is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So Pharaoh, in verse 16 and following, provides all of these provisions, as it were, for Joseph's brothers as they're heading north back into Canaan to bring down Joseph and the rest of their families. We will see later in the chapter, as we read in verses 27 and 28, that really these provisions that were provided by Pharaoh were part of the convincing, frankly, that Jacob needed to be convinced that Joseph was still alive. And so just all of these blessings that are poured out on Jacob and his family by Pharaoh, king of Egypt. The promise that in verse 18, I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. Bring everyone you have. Verse 20, do not concern yourselves with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. And so, verse 21, the sons of Israel did what they were commanded, and Joseph gave them the wagons that Pharaoh had said they should have. Verse 22, Joseph gives each of them changes of garments, but of course here his younger brother of Rachel, Benjamin, here, he gives 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. That is his blood brother, full blood brother of his mother Rachel, who died in childbirth. And you see in verse 23 these incredible gifts that Pharaoh provided for Jacob, 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, so on. Verse 24 is a very interesting verse. It says, so Joseph sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the journey. It's a very interesting verse here. So what is it that his brothers may quarrel about? Well, I mean, let's think about this. The last time that the brothers had a conversation with their father, Jacob, about Joseph, they were delivering to him the news that his favorite son, Joseph, had been torn to pieces by a wild animal and was gone. And so I think it's fair to say that it would have been a pretty difficult trip out of Egypt back into Canaan for Joseph's brothers. We could imagine, I believe here, that there would have been perhaps a little bit of fighting, a little bit of arguing, a little bit of blaming. I mean, think of Reuben, who was, as we saw back a few chapters ago, literally trying to save Joseph's life, and who was broken up about the fact that Joseph was missing out of the cistern. And so perhaps there would have been some finger-pointing and blame-shifting after all of these years. And I think Joseph is wise here. He knew that. And so his word of exhortation here in verse 24 is to do not quarrel amongst yourselves on the way. Just get back up there and bring my father down here. Verse 25, they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. So verse 26, they tell him this most unbelievable news. Joseph is still alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt, right? And this is sort of this twofold nature of this unbelievable message. First and foremost, Joseph is still alive. Jacob had been living these 20 years under the belief that Joseph was dead, torn apart by wild beasts. And but now he's being told by his sons that his favorite son is yet alive. And more than that, not only is he alive, but he is the ruler over all the land of Egypt. And we can see, we can imagine Jacob's unbelief, his, and we see it manifest here. It says he was stunned, for he did not believe them. It was that literally translated. It says that Jacob's heart grew numb. He was so stunned that he could not even feel. And verse 27, and they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them. And then here we see when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, all of these provisions made for him by Joseph and Pharaoh, Jacob changes his mind. It says the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And he said, it's enough. Essentially, I believe you. I believe what you're telling me, that my son Joseph is still alive. And so let's pack things up and let's go down to see him before I die. Chapter 46, verse 1. So Israel set out with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here I am. And he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. And I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their livestock and their property which they had acquired in the land of Canaan and came to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons and his grandsons with him, his daughters and his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. And then from verses 8 all the way through, verse 27, there's a listing of all of the persons that were brought down to Egypt. Verse 26, all the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, and his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. And I'll talk a little bit about that in relation to Acts chapter 7, verse 14 in a few minutes. Verse 28, now he sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way before him to Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. And Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as he appeared before him, he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a long time. Then Israel said to Joseph, Now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive. And Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and I will say to him, My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock. For they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come about, when Pharaoh calls you and says, What is your occupation? That you shall say, Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. So if we go back to verse 1, Israel, Jacob, and all of his family, they get loaded up on the wagons that have been provided to them. And they come to this place called Beersheba. Now, we have seen Beersheba before. If we take a quick trip back to chapter 26, verse 23, we see Isaac at Beersheba. So this is in the paragraph about a quarrel over the wells. Isaac had dug some wells, and then there was a quarrel with some herdsmen of Gerar. And here in verse 23 of chapter 26, Isaac goes up to Beersheba. Verse 24, And the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. And so Beersheba seems to be a place where God comes to visit the fathers and to speak to them. And we see that here at the same time. Verse 2, God spoke to him, says, Jacob, Jacob. And he says, Here I am. And verse 3, God said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will close your eyes. This is tremendous promise. And he says very similar things. I'm the God, and the God of your father, which he says back in 26:24. I am the God of your father, Abraham. He also in chapter 46 says, do not be afraid, which he also says here in 26:24. Do not fear, for I am with you. So a little bit of a different message, though, here. Previously, Abraham had made a mistake in going down to Egypt. If you go back to Genesis chapter 12, Genesis 12, verse 10, there was a famine in the land, so Abraham went down to Egypt. And it turned out not to be a real good experience for Abraham. And then Isaac, in 26, verse 2, the Lord appeared to Isaac and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land of which I shall tell you." So do not make the same mistake that your father Abraham made in going down to Egypt, because there was also a famine in the land in Isaac's time. But here in 46 verse 3, as opposed to Abraham going to Egypt wrongly, not trusting in God, and as opposed to God coming to Isaac and saying, "Do not go down to Egypt," 46, chapter 46, verse 3, God says to Isaac, "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt." So, message similar, but different. And God says to Jacob, "I will make you a great nation there." And then this incredible promise in 46, verse 4, "I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. And Joseph will close your eyes." This tremendous comfort that God provides to Jacob as he's preparing to head out of Canaan south into Egypt at God's command. And so we see in verse 5, he arises from Beersheba, and they carry their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had provided. Tremendous provisions from Pharaoh for Joseph's family. They took their livestock, verse 6, their property which they had acquired. And so then there's this counting from verses 8 to verse 25, verses 8 to 25. And then there's this counting here of 70. It's interesting because in Acts chapter 7, verse 14, as Stephen is recounting the history of the fathers, Acts 7, verse 14, Stephen says, during his trial, "Joseph sent word and invited Jacob his father and all his relatives to come to him, 75 persons in all." The way we would account for that, so you see in verse 26, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, there were 66 persons. And then you have the 9 wives of Jacob's sons. And when you add 66 and 9, you obviously get 75, which is what Stephen was bearing witness to in Acts chapter 7, verse 14. Now, Jacob sends Judah before him. Again, we've seen the prominence of Judah as Reuben and Simeon and Levi have fallen in terms of prominence in Jacob's family. And so the fourthborn Judah, who is obviously in the line of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, he has now become very prominent, preeminent even among his brothers, not including Joseph. We saw him certainly at the end of chapter 44 as becoming surety and a substitute for Benjamin. So Jacob sends Judah before him, before the caravan, to go and meet with Joseph and to point out the way before him to Goshen. And so that's where they go, as Joseph prescribed. As they arrive in Goshen, we see verse 29, Joseph prepares his chariot and goes up to meet his father Israel. And again, we see this weeping, this Joseph being a man of very strong emotions. He falls on his father's neck, and he wept, it says, on his neck a long time. Israel says to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive." And Jacob's not ready to die just yet, but he is satisfied in having the opportunity to see his favorite son again 20 years later, after living all of these years, a couple decades even, believing that Joseph is dead. And Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, verse 31, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan, who come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have.'" And so, verse 33, they're instructed, "When Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What is your occupation?' you shall say, 'Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. Now, this is a very interesting sort of bit of world history. The question is, why is every shepherd loathsome to the Egyptians? And why do Jacob and his family, who are shepherds by trade, have to be sequestered here away from all of the Egyptians? And it's very interesting world history. It's tied to what are called the Hyksos Pharaohs, Hyksos. And as you look back in the history of Egypt, there were certain periods in the history of Egypt where native Egyptians were not the pharaohs. During, for example, the Hyksos Pharaoh times, there were Arabians who would come south and west down into Egypt, and they would be pharaohs for a time. They're actually sometimes in history books called the shepherd kings, and these were foreign kings over the people of Egypt. And so, in the wake of the Hyksos pharaohs, or the shepherd kings, it turns out that the native Egyptians had a very bad taste in their mouths for shepherds, seeing them as foreigners who would come in to rule the land. But in the providence and sovereignty of God, we see this as very good for redemptive history. So the Egyptians have this bad taste in their mouths for shepherds because of the shepherd kings. But Jacob and his family come down as shepherds. And so they indeed are sequestered in Goshen. They did not intermix and intermarry with the Egyptians. And so their bloodlines were kept very pure throughout the 400 years that they were living in Egypt. And this is incredibly important to the line of the Israelites, and most specifically to the line of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So, again, we see God working these things out, this idea at the end of verse 34, every shepherd is loathsome to the Egyptians. God has worked that out for the glory of redemptive history. And so this is important and just gives you a little bit of the context for where that particular note comes from here at the end of Genesis chapter 46. One final note as we wrap up here this evening. I just want to sort of note the time frame. So, if we go back to Genesis chapter 15, verse 13. So, Genesis 15, a very important chapter in redemptive history, incredibly important. It's the covenant that God makes with Abraham, Genesis chapter 15. And so, if we just go back there, Genesis 15:1. God speaks to Abram in a vision, "Do not fear, Abram, I'm a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." And then Abram cries out to God, beginning in verse 2, talking about the idea that he is childless. And so how can I be great, as it were, if I cannot have any offspring? You have given me no offspring. One born in my house is my heir, verse 3. Verse 4, "Behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, This man, Eliezer of Damascus," as we see in verse 2, "will not be your heir, but one who shall come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir." So this tremendous promise to the man Abram. And God takes Abram outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." And then Genesis 15:6, which we've discussed extensively, this tremendous quotation, "He, Abram, believed in the Lord, and God reckoned it to Abram as righteousness." And we've seen previously that Paul picks that up in Romans 4 and Galatians 3. It's also quoted in James chapter 2. And then we see the story here of this covenant that God makes with Abraham, beginning in verse 9. Actually, it begins in verse 7 as God declares, so this is a unilateral covenant. "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land and to possess it. Verse 9, God says to Abram, bring me a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old female goat, a 3-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. And then these animals get cut in two. And then verse 12, the sun was going down and a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And then God, by this flaming torch or this flaming oven, passes through these pieces. And we can see that in verse 17. But before that, these promises that God makes to Abram, verse 13. God said to Abram, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. Genesis 15:13. God tells Abram that his descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs. Now fast forward all the way to Genesis chapter 46. This is how Abram's descendants get to the land that is not theirs. And then ultimately we know that over the course of the next 400 years after Joseph is forgotten, they become slaves here in Egypt. And so I just wanted to make a note here as we wrap up. By my estimation, from Genesis chapter 15 verse 13, when God makes Abram a promise and said his descendants will go into a land that is not theirs and ultimately become slaves, from that time when God makes that promise to Abram to the time that we just saw this evening where God brings Jacob out of Canaan into Egypt by the hand of his son Joseph, is approximately 123 years. And so again, as we've said before as part of this study, we see that God is so often not functioning on our own time frames, especially as 21st century believers, where we're accustomed to things like fast food and drive-thrus and groceries being delivered. We don't have to wait very often for things to happen for us in our lives and in our culture. But here we have, from the original promise that God made to Abram to the time when Abram's descendants leave Canaan and enter into Egypt, 123 years. And so we see God being faithful to his promises. And as we continue on in Genesis and then proceed into Exodus, we will see over and over and over again God being faithful to his promises on his time frames and on his timelines.